Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by Cachefly at cachefly.com. This is the iPhone LA Podcast, episode 34 for February 9th, 2009. Ja, 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 ja. All right, so let's do this. It's time for the iPhone LA Podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me today from the Mac Observer is Jeff Gamet. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going for you?
Going great. How's it going with you?
It's going dang fine.
That's great.
Yeah.
Had a good Sunday.
Oh yeah, and I just have to point out for anyone that follows me on Twitter that the lunch photo that I showed earlier today, that really was my lunch.
What was your lunch?
A chocolate chip cookie and a glass of Dewars at the pub.
Yeah, I did. I called you earlier.
Actually,
today
you called me while I was having my lunch. Yes.
Yeah, and you said I'm at the bar, and I looked at the clock, and I said, "Oh, okay. Well, it must be the time zone thing." It was like 3 o'clock central or whatever. Just blame it on the time zone. We won't dig too deep into that. And also here is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not wonderful, but I'll make it through somehow. I've had a weekend of being sick, so.
Yeah, we will make it easy on you. And we greatly appreciate you coming even though you're sick.
So, Adam, that's all right. I still have to truck on. I actually finally swapped out my Mac Mini for my 15-inch MacBook also. So I just did the migration assistant thing and brought over all my user accounts. So hopefully everything runs fine.
Nice. It's always good when you get a new Mac. So getting into it, yes, so Skype. They're coming to the iPhone. Supposedly, they said at CES that they already have the Skype on the Android, right? And they're coming to the iPhone soon. One of the problems, though, is that they're working on cutting the amount of power that the application consumes. Good, bad, who cares?
Interesting. I mean, I'm a Skype user. We all are Skype users. So
unfortunately.
I have to wonder how much I would really necessarily use it. Depending on how much I'm on Wi-Fi and things like that.
Yeah, you have to be on Wi-Fi. So for any VoIP application on the iPhone, you have to be on Wi-Fi. That's one of the rules that Apple put out there.
And it's a phone. So you see, it has this weird thing where you can like call. I guess I don't call that much internationally. It could be huge for people who need to do a lot of international calling, I suppose.
I think it'll be big for iPod Touch people also.
That's true.
I was going to say, didn't I read this week? Didn't somebody release a VoIP SMS app for the iPod Touch? Did I see that somewhere? Did you guys catch that story?
No.
Jeff. Yeah, so I think an app has already been released that does VoIP and SMS for the iPod Touch. I'm going to do some Googling and try and find it while we talk about it. But
that just proves
there's demand for it, very least.
Is it Jaja? That's the first thing that came up.
That's it.
Okay.
That's it.
Turns your
And it does
iPod
say it was
Touch
released, right?
Da-da-da.
I'm looking on the iTunes store right now.
Sorry, I didn't mean to sidetrack us, but
no, that's fine. I don't see it.
I don't see it either. Although Jaja, the band, has some stuff out. So yeah, so there's like three albums. Jaja Remastered.
That's
Jaja.
Not what we're talking about, though, Jeff.
So maybe they've also just announced that they're planning an app. So.
Yeah.
Skype might not be the only
one. Jaja is readying their voice application or VoIP application for the second generation iPod Touch. So obviously it has to be the second gen because the first one doesn't have the microphone input through the earbuds. Right, that's the only way you can get a microphone on the iPod Touch. There's no mic actually built into the unit. You have to plug a mic in.
You have to plug one in.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I wonder, I guess, you know, the iPod Touch people, there aren't as many iPod Touch people on iPhone Alley, but you know, every once in a while I'll get a message from iPod Touch people saying, "Hey, you know, whatever." So, you know, good for the iPod Touch people.
I mean, do they have Apple's approval? Do they think they're going to have any troubles with Apple and AT&T and I mean, well, you get VoIP on there, and it takes away some of the differences between the iPhone and the iPod Touch. Again, you're still locked to Wi-Fi, so it's not as convenient as having an iPhone. But hey, you've got voice dialing all of a sudden on the other device.
Well, yeah. So, what's the other VoIP application that's out there right now? Da 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 da. Do we remember? They were at Macworld. I'm riffing. TruePhone. Is that available for the iPod Touch? Compatible with iPhone, requires iPhone 2.1 software. I assume it'll work on the iPod Touch.
I would assume it would work on the second gen iPod Touch.
Well, I'm sure it'll just download on the first one and just say, sorry.
It
just won't work. Yeah. So I don't think there's any big issue. Obviously, AT&T isn't really in on the whole iPod Touch deal. They have no say. They may say something to Apple like, hey, we don't, you know, like the ability to put VoIP on the iPod Touch, but I don't think they can really, they don't have any leverage in that.
I don't think they care about the iPod Touch.
Yeah.
It's just the iPhone, because that's the device that if you add VoIP, you can potentially take away from AT&T revenue.
Right.
But on the other hand, you already have to pay for everything that you get with an iPhone. So if you decide not to use the service that you're already paying for, so that you can use a VoIP client, well, what difference should that make to AT&T? Unless they're going to come out with their own.
Yeah, I don't think it's a big deal, especially just because it goes over Wi-Fi. Who cares? So I think it's good. Now, the SMS thing, that's interesting, though. Is that just something that they can just add to a VoIP client? Do you know anything about that, Adam, how they're doing an SMS? Is that over?
No, like I said, I think I just saw the story over on Gizmodo as I was doing the prep for my show, and I kind of threw it aside to get into in a little more detail. But from the user interface shots, I think it just had an SMS button.
Yeah, there's an SMS button. You can send and receive SMS messages over IP, and you can even have a real number assigned your iPod Touch. So I guess it just works, you know, if you have a regular number, someone can send you an SMS to your VoIP number, and it'll just come over like it would whenever you open the application.
Yeah, I think it just goes through the JaJa service. I think there's a service that you have to sign up for as well, just like with Skype, and they would basically pass along the SMS call.
Right.
Or text.
So, okay, I'm going to try and make a transition here to the background processes because, you know, getting those kind of things in would be good. You know, we haven't seen the push notifications, and that's irritating, and that's just one of those things that everybody I talk to is a little irritated about. I'm sure you guys are a little irritated about that too. I am.
I'm very irritated by it, and I think what's most frustrating is nobody knows why. They just like know, it's all speculation. A lot of people think they know why, but Apple's not saying diddly.
Nothing. I think the last thing we heard from Apple was Steve Jobs emailing someone saying it's running a little behind.
It's you know, it's almost like they just were pretending it was never even mentioned. It's like, oh, we say that?
Wait, what? You know, does anyone have video proof of that? Oh, you do? Oh, well, never mind.
Hang on, we'll edit that out. It'll be interesting to look at the WWDC video and see if they edit it out. I bet they won't, but it'd be funny. It'd be very Apple-like to do that. But so, supposedly, according to Arnold Kim, we couldn't get him on the show this week, but he thinks that Apple may be considering background processes on the iPhone after all. And the big presentation at WWDC last year when they announced the push notifications was that having background processes, third-party background processes, is bad for battery life, bad for performance, and then you have to manage the whole thing. And they made fun of, you know, Windows mobile phones that have task managers and all that stuff. And they say, oh, you know, iPhone users won't want that. And honestly, the push notification thing is a great idea for 90%. Of the application. There are some applications like, you know, like an OmniFocus or just an application that sends out reminders in general, but don't necessarily have a cloud presence that wouldn't work with. But otherwise, with an IM client, that'd be perfect. So I'm just looking through here. They just think, you know, something is holding up push notifications. They're not sure what it might be, although they've heard that Apple may allow several third-party applications to run in the background. They would be user-selectable and would likely come as a part of the rumored 3.0 software update. They also believe that the next generation iPhone would be less restrictive as far as the background processes go because of hardware capabilities, improved hardware. Do you think this is something that Apple will do? Because, I mean, Apple doesn't necessarily go against their, like, I won't say that because they do go against their word. A good example is the iPod with video. And they said they would never go with video. But they did make a big presentation about how background processes are a bad idea. So, I mean, do you think they're going to go with background processes on the iPhone after all? It doesn't seem like a very good, you know, Apple-like experience because the task manager, or, I mean, what do they call it? Activity monitor, right? The activity monitor isn't something that Apple users really are aware of. At the very most, they're only aware of, you know, the force quit window. You know, unlike Windows users where they know about the task manager. So it doesn't seem like a good thing to have on the iPhone. And it would certainly be something you want to, dabble in if you're an iPhone user with background processes because it's such a limited device. I mean, right now it gets sluggish and every few days you have to reboot. Mm-hmm. Good, bad?
I think it's anything.
You don't think it's anything? You think Apple's going to go with it?
No, I think Apple is probably came up with a couple issues that they weren't able to overcome as easily as they thought. And those issues probably relate to controlling what developers actually do with background processes. And until they have the control over that they really want, well, that's it. No one's going to get access to that unless maybe there's some company that works on a higher plane that they like and want to team up with and then give them access to background processes.
Well, here's what I think. I think, first of all, the push notification, going back to what it was and the time that they announced it, it was very close to the MobileMe rollout, and we all know how that went.
Swimmingly.
Yeah. But it seems like it would be on the same kind of technology that there would be a lot of there'd be so many applications just, you know, crowding around this server saying, oh, you know, push this notification, push this notification. Then there's a lot of stuff that I think developers would have to work with, maybe setting up servers that they don't necessarily have to. Who knows? But I think that with the push notification service plus maybe just a just a scheduled reminder service in the iPhone, because right now, obviously, there's the calendar where there are alarms, and those are handled by a background process that's obviously Apple's, but why can't a third-party developer say, okay, schedule me in there for, you know, this date and time, and when the notification comes up and they hit, you know, view, it'll bring me to that application. That's all they need. They don't need to add any more background processes. It's just adding another date to their scheduling process, you know? So it'll be interesting to see if they bring it in. But Jeff, you think they're going to be bringing in background processes eventually?
I think so. I think it's one of those things that when Apple said, hey, we are doing this, I think they actually have intended to really do it. And I think it's just another one of those situations where the level of control they want isn't as easy to maintain as they thought it would be.
So to be clear, you're talking about background processes, not the push notification thing.
Background processes.
Okay. All right. So moving on, AT&T tethering plan to be $10 a month. According to Mac blogs, they say that they spoke with some associates at AT&T who say AT&T is considering a $10 a month, you know, additional charge for tethering for the iPhone. Is this something that, I mean, we've talked about tethering before. It's certainly something that a lot of people would be interested in, not everybody. The current tethering plan for most people with AT&T phones, it's an additional $30, right? So
right.
I think $10 is much more reasonable. Obviously, it's another $10 that they're taking from us, even though we're paying for the data.
Something, can I verify that associate? That's somebody like on the floor at an AT&T store, right?
It very well could be.
I mean, is that what an associate is? An AT&T associate?
Yeah. Some of them are. Yeah, they're called associates, but who knows if that's what they were referring to or not?
Because if that's who they talk to, then
it could be
this
absolute
is a great
crap
rumor. Because those guys will tell you anything.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they will.
Oh, yeah. It's just going to be $10 a month. Don't worry about it. It's coming. Buy this
phone. Just sign on the line.
So, I don't know. I kind of question this. I question this. Why would AT&T, if plans on other phones is $30 to tether, why would they be giving us a discount? And I that only is further backed up by the fact when they did the 3G plan, you know, they couldn't even leave in the 200 SMS messages.
Right. That became
still irks me to this day.
I'm just looking through. Associate was our word when we wrote about it. So,
I heard that word and I was like, well, there's lots of people at AT&T that'll say different things, but until they actually do something.
Right. And this is
why don't we have tethering now even at $30? I mean, what's the hold up there? I guess it's the bigger question in my mind.
Well, I wonder if it's something that Apple has to come up with a good solution. You know, something that's easy enough for people to actually figure out.
I think that it's AT&T.
You think it's AT&T? You think Apple's got the tethering thing figured out and ready to go? They're just waiting for AT&T?
Yeah, and my guess is that it's actually AT&T being concerned about the amount of data that will get pushed through their networks, because they were clearly caught off guard with the amount of data that iPhone users actually pump through. And so adding in the ability to hook up your laptop to your iPhone and push even more data, I think that's kind of freaking out AT&T.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's so much coming in already with, you know, even just the few streaming streaming audio applications, you know, the big ones like Pandora and Last.fm. And I'm looking through this Mac Blogs post, and it says, without having to contact my colleagues at AT&T, they got a hold of me to share some information about the plan. So they didn't say associates. They said, you know, colleagues, but
colleague at AT&T.
That could be, well, you know, yeah. Whatever.
I mean, I don't want to discredit anybody's rumor, but again, it's just rumor. So
yeah, and we haven't heard anything more about it. This was early last month, so January 12th is when we heard.
Well,
about
the
that.
Other thing we keep hearing about that's almost along the same lines, and I have some doubts about as well, is that Apple and AT&T are working on some sort of, you know, subsidized notebook that is going to have 3G capabilities built into it.
Yeah, I did hear about that. Now, that would be through AT&T? Or we don't
yeah,
know?
Yeah, and I mentioned on another podcast what I think that is simply, I think AT&T has the little bundled USB modem that they use for their 3G data network, right? I'm assuming like Sprint and Verizon and all these guys have these little USB dongle modems that you can hang off. And I think in that case, it's not Apple's going to build chipsets into some notebook and only sell it through AT&T as a subsidized thing. I think what they'll do is they'll just bundle a MacBook with a USB modem that runs on AT&T's 3G network, subsidize it, so you can get the $1,200 notebook for $600 when you sign up for three years of $60 a month data service.
To me, that sounds very un-Apple.
Well, it wouldn't be Apple. This would just be Apple saying, "Hey,
like,
yeah,
here's a
you
coupon.
Sell all our machines in your AT&T stores. Sure, it's
so
just another
so they wouldn't be
for Apple
bundling. Or so you're saying they would actually sell them the MacBooks in the AT&T stores?
Exactly, okay. Because it'd be subsidized.
So it wouldn't be something that where the thing came in the box. It would be here. You know, here's a coupon for, you know, so much off at AT&T when you get. You know, when you buy this and this.
AT&T, just like they are for the iPhone, would be a reseller of MacBooks. And right. Apple would say, okay, you guys can have the $999 white MacBook. It's for $500 and go for it. You know, you're going to pay us $999 for them or whatever, you know, the wholesale price is. But just like they do the iPhone, I think it's exactly the same kind of thing. But that's just my theory. I'm just totally speculating. But yeah. When I heard that rumor, I was like, well, why not? Apple would sell a lot more MacBooks and it's money in the bank, just like the iPhone.
You know, my instincts are telling me not going to happen. But I'm going to add the perspective to that of knowing that I said the exact same thing about the iPhone being sold in Walmart.
Exactly. I'm changing my opinions on Apple's retail strategies quite a bit because of things like that. I'm on the same page as you. And that's where this came from when I was hearing that rumor. So... you know, as far as the tethering goes, I think AT&T can do whatever they want. I don't think it's a limitation of Apple. I mean, and it would be a wired tether in the case of AT&T, right? You'd run a USB cable to the dock connector on the iPhone or something like that. Is that what the theory is?
That's what my speculation is. That'd be the easiest way to set it up. Doing the Wi-Fi thing or the Bluetooth thing doesn't seem as easy. And it would drain the power, too. So,
Yeah. I think they'll do it when they're ready and want to make the money off of it. But I think they're still struggling with their network issues.
You think they'll kill NetShare when that does happen?
Oh, I hope not.
With their kill, because they have the kill switch, right?
Yeah, I'm going to speculate that Apple will not kill NetShare. Excuse me, because if they did the kill switch with that application, they would be going down a very slippery slope. If they do it with an application that is clearly malicious, that's a different thing. But just saying, okay, we're shutting this application down because
we don't like it.
It's a conflict of interest with AT&T or whatever. I think that would be very bad.
And that's probably why they haven't done it yet.
Right. And I'm betting they're not going to do it.
Yeah. I'm always edgy though. Whenever, you know, I tried getting in a NetShare the other day and it popped up and crashed every time I launched it. And so I turned to my friend and I said, can you try launching NetShare on your iPhone? Because I think something bad may have happened. And of course it worked on his. And so I deleted it and reinstalled it and it worked fine. But I'm always wary of that application one of these days just dying.
Yeah, I get a little worried about that too every time I go to use it. And especially because when I go to use NetShare, it's because I need to have internet access from my MacBook Pro right now.
Exactly. Right. It's not one of those apps you just lightly open up because configuring it and setting it up every time is like a 10-minute process.
Right.
Right.
And too bad. What is it? What's the company? Null River. Too bad they didn't set it up as more of like a router type application, but whatever. Let's move on to the third-party web browsers in the App Store. Apple is now allowing those. They've been allowing them for a few weeks now. They've got third-party web browsers in the App Store, and I think that's really cool. I think they're all running right now on WebKit, right? They're all WebKit browsers, so they're just different. They have different buttons and layouts and configurations and different little interesting things they can do, but they're all running on the same rendering engine as Safari is. Have you guys tried any of these applications, any of these web browsers yet?
That's what I was going to ask you. I haven't. I'm perfectly happy with Safari.
Me too. So. I looked at, well, Jeff, you're the one who's always, you know, hating on the Safari. Have you tried any of these?
Actually, I'm downloading Edge browser right now, so okay. I can try it out and let you know what I think.
Okay.
But I'm not overly excited about the crop of web browsers that are available, and not because I think that any of them would be bad, but because I'm looking at what they're running on, and why should I expect to have any experience that's different from what I already get with Safari?
Right. So the one thing that one of my friends pointed out is that you can have, I think there's one web browser that actually allows you to set up parental controls. And so you can't do that with Safari. It's either on or it's off, right? So if you hand your kid an iPhone and you say, well, I want to restrict him from certain sites, you're going to restrict him from everything. So the way around that is obviously buy one of these web browsers that has parental controls, disable Safari, and then I guess disable the App Store too so we can't grab another browser.
Right.
That's the only real app, you know, use I can see. Now, I guess this opens the door to other stuff like mail clients, and that's something I'm excited to see because, like I've said before, I use Google, I use Gmail for all my stuff, so I use MailPlane actually on my Mac just because I don't want my mail running in a web browser, which, you know, may or may not crash, or I may need to quit or whatever. So it's good to have separate applications, and the Gmail interface works better for the way I work in my mail than the Mail app does, and of course it has search and all that. So I'd love to see, you know, a Google focused web browser or mail application on the iPhone. That'd be fantastic. So do you think that opens the door for other stuff like this? Because obviously a web browser is something that is already on the iPhone. And that was their, I think that was their, what they were telling everyone why they got rid of the mail applications is because, oh, there's already a mail application on there. It's competing with our mail application.
Right. And I think, yeah, right. No, I'm just not buying this whole thing. I think that we're not going to see any web browsers that have that run on anything other than WebKit. I think Apple's going to keep tight reins over the email application thing. Excuse me, which really bothers me because I would like to see some alternatives because, frankly, I think that Safari is not stable on the iPhone and I find Mail's performance on the iPhone to be sluggish most of the time and very frustrating. And I'm certain that my experience is different from most people's because I'm watching, I think, five email applications, IMAP email, or excuse me, I'm watching five different IMAP email accounts on my iPhone at any given time, and they all have very high traffic, so I'm probably pushing the application beyond its limits anyhow.
Okay, so did we, I don't think we covered the 2.2.1 update last week. Have you, I think the one big change in that was Safari performance. Have you seen any change?
None.
None? Still crashing?
Still crashes, and yeah, there you go. Safari still crashes.
Huh. So you think that as long as it's a WebKit browser that they're going to approve it if and when Mozilla decides to, you know, get their engine running on the iPhone and submit it to Apple, Apple's going to say no, we don't want your browser on there.
That's what my Jedi instincts are telling me. But keep in mind, my Jedi instincts also told me no iPhone at Walmart.
Right, Adam, what do you think?
I don't see how these are very much different than any other application that has a built-in web browser. You know, so I think they let in because ultimately they're just exactly the same as, I mean, my NetNewsWire has a web browser built in. I click a link, it goes to the built-in web browser. I think I can change it and have it launch the external Safari web browser. And, you know, so you have a couple extra buttons, a couple extra features. I think you're right, though, Michael. I think a lot more people are more excited about the alternate mail clients or the things people are doing with mail. I know a lot of people who really like the one where you can compose your mail in landscape mode. And then the other one that seems to be popular now is there's an app, I guess, that'll let you attach multiple photos to a single email.
Yeah. Okay. So those aren't mail applications though. Those are like
additional other apps that
things.
Tie into mail. You're right.
And they toss at the end of your process of typing, or
that's true.
They throw it
that's
back
true.
To mail.
Yeah. When I really think about it, but so yeah, I guess to that point, then opening up mail probably is more exciting for, I think, a lot more people. I don't hear that many people complaining about Safari per se, other than the crashing issue, which Jeff, I agree. The funny thing was, as you guys were talking about that, I was thinking about, I really don't use Safari on the iPhone that much anymore because third-party apps came into play. So when everything was web-based, you were in Safari all the time. Now,
right, yeah.
I have all these other apps for Facebook and Twitter and what have you, Flickr, that are just native apps that I use.
Yeah.
So not Safari all that much anymore.
Yeah, even for like
for me, Safari is just my tool that I use when, like, if I need to look up something in IMDb, because sadly in my life that comes up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm in Safari. I'm looking up facts so that I actually sound like I know what I'm talking about, you know, or trying to win a bet.
There's an IMDb. So, there is no IMDb app yet.
Like, oh, I hope there is.
There might be, because the thing that
there needs to be
the thing I always use Safari for on my iPhone was Wikipedia constantly, and now I have an application for that.
That's great. Wikipedia apps. Yeah,
I use Wikipanion. What do you use?
I'd have to look on my phone. I think the same one. I think that's the right.
It's got a nice little like.
Is it a blue icon?
No, it's a brown like.
Brown.
A book.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
That's
so
the
that's.
One I have.
I'm hardly ever in Safari now. I mean, I've had the same tab open for days now. You know, just looking at. I don't know. Are there
for,
any good
for
dictionary
movie stuff?
So go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say for movie stuff, I kind of know a lot. Very often, we'll start looking in ITV.
Now, oh, no, that's smart.
Yeah. But they usually list, you know, the core actors and directors and things like that. And
right.
With the what put that app over the edge for me was the Netflix integration.
Okay.
Right? That's the one that has Netflix built in. think I can manage my Netflix queue from that. And one of the apps that I have, I can.
Okay, I'm looking at movies by Flixster. It has IMDb built in for additional information on current movies. So there, it doesn't seem like there are any IMDb apps yet. But are there any good dictionary apps yet? I don't know if it's a good idea to download an entire dictionary onto your phone or if it's better to just have like a little web browser, like a dedicated web browser for looking words up. Have you guys found anything?
I haven't, but it's funny that you bring that up because I very often wish that they would just have the same dictionary that macOS 10 has built into it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
With the autocorrect and you know, if I could hold down on a word and have it pop up and give me the definition or alternate spellings.
Yeah, because right now you have to try different spellings. You have to say, okay, maybe it's spelled this way. I'm going to hit the last letter wrong and see if it autocorrects it. If it autocorrects it, then that's how you spell it or something. At least that's how I do it.
The iPhone poor man's OS X dictionary.
Right. Jeff, you said you found a dictionary app?
No, I have not.
Okay.
But I was going to say that Edge browser won't load on my iPod Touch. It says it's not compatible.
Oh, that...
Wow, how interesting is that?
Sounds like bogus Apple stuff to me.
And, I couldn't actually see it in the App Store application on my iPod Touch.
It says compatible with iPhone. Compatible with iPhone on Edge browser. I'm looking at then Incognito, another web browser. That's compatible with iPhone and iPod Touch.
That's just fracking lame.
Okay, and then going back to TruePhone is compatible with iPhone. So I wonder if, you know, maybe you want to try that while you're messing around.
The TruePhone thing, they have a TruePhone for iPod Touch as a separate app.
TruePhone for iPhone, TruePhone for iPod Touch. Got it. Okay.
See, I was trying to be considerate of our listeners and use my iPod Touch to download and test this application while we're talking so that my external speakers on my desk wouldn't buzz.
Mm-hmm.
And, apparently this company that makes Edge browser just simply doesn't want to cooperate with me.
I don't get the buzz as much anymore on my iPhone. I hardly ever get the buzz. I only get the buzz.
It's not as bad with 3G.
When it's on Edge. In Edge, it's terrible. 3G, hardly ever. You guys have been noticing that too?
I don't get it as much. I have a first gen, and I've been noticing it's not that bad anymore.
That's good. Yeah, the buzz is really bad, especially if you're in the car, you know, doing the FM transmitter thing. So, yeah, moving on. Microsoft announces Hotmail POP3 support for iPhone in select countries, so I didn't catch that part.
In select countries.
Well, probably because does anybody in the U.S. use Hotmail anymore? I'm sorry, I'm probably pissing off everybody who uses Hotmail, but...
My assumption is no.
UK, Canada, Australia, France, Japan, Spain, Germany, Italy, and the Netherlands. Well, never mind then. It's not in the U.S. That's kind of...
I think, hasn't Hotmail kind of been superseded by some of the stuff? I haven't
Windows
been keeping
Live
up
or something.
On Microsoft's
I don't know.
Cloud, you know, mesh stuff. Everybody's talking about mesh and
isn't
Microsoft
it Live Mail or something like that now? We're so ignorant.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when Hotmail was cool, and then Microsoft bought it and completely hosed the product.
I remember checking email was the process of deleting spam and panning for the gold that was actual email.
What? That's changed?
Certainly for me. I use Gmail.
Oh, and see, and I use SpamSieve.
Okay. Well, let's not get into that. What else do we want to look at?
Flash.
Oh, Flash? Let's talk about Flash. Okay. So you want to introduce that topic since you
Well, Flash for iPhone. I mean, was it last week already? I think it's already been a week where the CEO from Adobe Systems came out and said that it's proving to be more technically challenging than they had first thought, and that they're actually working with Apple to try and bring Flash to the iPhone. And what was interesting was initially they said they could do it under the existing SDK. They came out really, really quick after the SDK was released and were like, yeah, we can do Flash for the iPhone with the SDK. And then they were kind of like, no. And that was when Steve Jobs came out and said, well, here's the problem. Flash on the desktop is too heavy. It's not going to run well on the iPhone. It's going to suck up a lot of battery. And the light version that's on mobile devices is just not full-featured enough. So we've got to have something else. and you kind of heard no response from Adobe till now, and then suddenly you hear this, and it's like, yeah, we're working on kind of this third version of Flash that's going to be an iPhone. It sounds like it's going to be an iPhone optimized one. So I'm pretty excited about that. They just didn't give any details on how long it was going to take.
So this came from Adobe's CEO? Okay. But we haven't heard anything from Apple on this yet.
I wouldn't expect to hear anything from Apple until they say, oh, look, Flash is on the iPhone.
So you think this is a legit thing, even though we haven't heard anything from Apple?
It was in a Bloomberg interview. The CEO of Adobe says in a Bloomberg interview that they're working with Apple on Flash for the iPhone. Yeah. I gotta believe that.
I believe him. The Adobe CEO, yeah. Okay.
Now, I'll give a little more credence to that as well.
Okay.
People inside Adobe told me before the launch of Creative Suite 4 that they were working on Flash for the iPhone.
Uh-huh.
So,
and you've got super ties with them, too.
Yeah. Well, every now and then, apparently. Mm-hmm. But there you go. So I was told that, yes, they are actually working on Flash for the iPhone. And so that was... What? When did Creative Suite 4 come out?
A few months ago.
And it was probably a couple months before it actually came out that I was told this. And this came from reliable people that have actual legit Adobe ID tags that they wear to work.
Right. So do you think this is a technological issue? It seems like that's what it would be if they have to work with Apple. I mean, it makes
a
lot of sense.
They probably need access to private APIs and things at the lower level of the
system. Oh, I'm certain you're right on
that. Have access to.
They have to be an actual plugin to Safari, and I don't think that Apple allows plugins for Safari to third parties at all on the iPhone.
Right.
Right. So there you go.
So that would be something that would come standard in the iPhone software, I assume. I don't think you can. The way that the App Store is set up, I don't think there's that kind of access to the phone through the App Store at all. So that would have to come through with a software update.
Right. So that'll be interesting to see how that ends up working out.
Now, if it's something that we can turn off, I mean, right now we're always complaining about Safari. I hope that at least it's something we can turn off.
I'm sure it'll be something in the Safari preferences that you can enable or disable Flash. Mm-hmm. But I would agree that I look at my Apple TV to get Flash on the Apple TV, you have to basically, you know, patch stick and break it. It's something that needs to be at the core of the operating system, or at least at the core of the browser plugins for sure, as you mentioned. And so it's just going to be something that's going to be in there. It's going to be part of, probably integrated into a software update. I don't think it's going to be a separate app that we buy or download from the App Store.
And not only that, looking at when I did put Flash on my Apple TV, it was awful. It was really, really slow and not that usable. So there do need to be many changes.
Well, that's changed now, because I'm assuming, maybe I'm getting this wrong, but I have the Boxy on my Apple TV.
Yep.
And it runs great running Hulu, and I would imagine it's just running the Flash. So I can't imagine that they're, you know, unwrapping it and giving me the H.264 underneath or something.
I don't know if they even can unwrap it. But the last time I looked at Hulu on my Apple TV, it was almost unwatchable. So, but it's better. This is recent.
Try it again.
I don't even have my Apple TV plugged in because we switched over to a DVR, and I just hadn't gotten a cable because they're like $40 at Best Buy.
It's running pretty good now. So anyway, an aside.
Cool.
But
okay,
Flash, I'm excited about.
Yeah. Jeff, are you excited about Flash?
No, I'm not. Okay, here's the reason I'm not excited about Flash. Excuse me. I think I have a hairball tonight, so I'm really sorry about that. All right. Anyhow, I really like Flash, and I think it's a great technology when used correctly. The problem is most people do not, nor do they understand how to use it correctly. So we're kind of stuck in a situation where Flash can't work better than it does because people don't know how to use it better than they do. So we end up with a lot of websites that run real heavy bandwidth when they don't need to. They really bog down your processor. They really bog down your web browser. And I don't see that changing. So in that sense, I am not excited about Flash coming to the iPhone.
You don't think it's a problem of the Flash player itself. You think it's actually the developer of the Flash page going a little too crazy with what, you know, whatever they're including.
I think so. And man, see, hairball. So anyhow, I think that most of what Adobe's doing, now keep in mind, this part is speculation. No one inside Adobe has said this is what we're doing. So this is speculation on my part. I think a lot of what Adobe is doing with their Flash player and their Flash development tools is trying to account for the fact that there's a lot of really cruddy Flash developers out there, and they're trying to find ways to better encode the crap that these people are writing.
Yeah.
That said, I'm expecting that I'll probably start getting all kinds of flame emails within minutes of people hearing this podcast.
That's fine. I'm totally, I'm not going to say totally.
You're for most, Jeff I'm getting mostly, flame emails.
No, I'm for that, but that isn't what I was going to say. No, I'm mostly against Flash websites in general. I'm 100% for, you know, Flash players, YouTube, Google Video, all that stuff. That's fine. That is a perfect use of Flash. But having an entire sure. website made out of Flash, no, I can't handle that.
And that's not what Flash is for. And
exactly.
if you ask the people in Adobe that develop support and make sure Flash gets out the door, they'll tell you the same thing.
And that's
it
where
it is not designed to run your whole website.
And that is where the problems usually come from. That's where the big processor hogging websites come from, is because they're all made out of Flash. And I think a lot of it can be handled with Ajax. And wasn't there was an article on Mac Rumors about Apple possibly going CSS animation coming to Safari. It's already in the iPhone. Less dependence than Flash. Have you guys looked at this?
Yeah, I took a look at it. Being a web developer, I'm excited. Unfortunately, it's only in WebKit right now because it's not part of the. I guess it's proposed in the next CSS spec. I think I have to look into it a little deeper, but. I was looking at it. It's very cool. I mean, you can do some very Flash-like stuff just with CSS without even having to throw in any JavaScript or anything else in there.
You can do gradients, masks, transitions, other stuff.
Oh, yeah. You can have stuff bouncing around, shapes, you know, shapes moving around, things like that. So they had a really cool demo of like a little ad with these leaves falling. And I think all the individual leaves were just individual, you know, PNG elements on a layer being animated all in CSS. So for developers, you know, that's huge, and it's standard. Hopefully it will become a standard and we can just all take advantage of it. But to your point, there is, like, you don't need to do any kind of animated menu anymore, any kind of animated menu navigation using Flash. That's generally what a lot of developers used to fall back on,
right?
Just because it's easy. And I was going to say, I'm probably going to 180 because, yeah, I thought, you know, great, we're finally getting Flash on the iPhone. But Jeff brings up a good point. One of the problems with Flash is it lets developers be lazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also if we look at something like, you know, we have YouTube on the iPhone and it's running and it's just playing H.264. We now have Ustream, which was all Flash based on the web, but you have a Ustream app on the iPhone. So it's like developers can bring their content to the iPhone without Flash. So you might be right. What might end up happening is if we suddenly have Flash available, especially if it's available to third-party apps, which that's not really clear that it would be, but just let's say it was, you know, Flash still is kind of heavy. You have a wrapper around something else that's standard and supported on the iPhone, which is H.264 video. So if it's just for video stuff, why have that extra Flash wrapper around it when you could just play the native format?
I agree.
I completely agree. So let's move on. Let's talk about Google Latitude. What do you guys think? I think we've spoken about Brightkite on the podcast before. Brightkite is a location-based social network application, and we enjoy it quite a bit. I know Jeff enjoys the heck out of it. And it's a great thing. I love the Brightkite. Now, Google Latitude is essentially location-based. It is a location-based social network through Google. And the way it works, correct me if I'm wrong, because I didn't really read this. I just skimmed it. But it looks like it will track your phone and your Mac as long as you actually have to register it. And then when Google sees it somehow... See, I should have totally read this, but either with your phone or with your laptop over Wi-Fi or cellular towers and that kind of stuff, it'll try and triangulate best it can based on that information where you are and then update your location. Adam, you want to step in and give us a more thorough?
No, because I haven't looked into it either. It's funny. I saw the invites popping up, though. You know, I've had a couple people invite me to the service, and I was like, oh, what's this? But, you know, I've been very happy with Brightkite. So it's kind of like one of those things. It's like, why do I need another one of these things? Now, the one thing that's making me kind of interested in it is I love Google Maps everywhere. Actually, I was just playing this weekend with the new Google Earth 5.0.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just unbelievable. It's amazing. So it's sort of like if it's integrated with Google Maps, that could be very, very interesting.
Yes. I'm going to see if I can play this video here.
You know, I'm...
Introducing Google Latitude.
Can you hear it?
Latitude is a new feature on Google Maps that allows you to see where your friends and family are on a map and easily keep in touch with them. To start sharing a location, just send an invitation to a friend or accept if they ask you. You have complete control over your privacy even after accepting invites. Let me show you how Google Latitude works. I'm signing in to Latitude,
then
adding friends from my Gmail contacts. When your friends accept, you can see them on your phone.
So they're showing this
for example,
Android right now.
Ali shared his location with me. He's currently in Cairo visiting his friends. My friend Alice is one of my surfer buddies. We keep in touch through Latitude. Let's see what the swells are like.
So this is all
I'm glad
a Google
that
Maps
mom and dad arrived home safely
interface
from the airport.
That they're
there
showing
was
some all
bad
of a sudden.
Weather
there's a little bubble above the person where they are
in
their little
look
picture.
At this. Looks like some of my buddies are nearby. Playing tennis? Well, maybe they're free for dinner. My mom doesn't have a mobile.
Okay.
But I can still share my location
so
with her
it doesn't really tell
on her computer.
How you set it up.
Stay in touch with your friends and family with Google Latitude.
Okay.
To get started with Latitude, just go to google.com/latitude from your phone's browser.
So there
or
are,
from your computer.
There are a couple phones that work with it right now. Right. I think a few BlackBerry phones. Here I'm looking. Okay, Android obviously. iPhone and iPod Touch coming soon. So that leads me to believe that we're going to be seeing an update to the iPhone and iPod Touch soon. Because that's, you know, how it works.
It says, according to your website, Ed Kirk, I think it says iPhone support will happen soon as a feature in the Google mobile app. So it sounds like they're going to update the Google mobile app, right? That's the little Google app on the iPhone. Is that right?
Right.
Google mobile. Huh. That's what it says? That's what it says on our website.
On iPhone Alley.
Yeah, that's where it's... Well, it doesn't specify here. Unless I'm not seeing mobile. For mobile clients. Google. Maybe that's where it's going to be coming.
Look at the last sentence.
No, I saw it. I saw it in there. I'm just looking through the blog right now. So Google... Well, that's going to be irritating if you have to switch through, you know, back and forth to Google Maps. But then again, maybe you don't want to see Latitude crap in Google Maps. So maybe it's going to come with the Google mobile application. That would make a lot more sense. So
seems the easiest way for it would make sense because it would be the easiest way for Google to push that feature out.
Yeah, otherwise they'd
to
have to
everybody
partner
who
Apple.
Already has it on their already has the app on their iPhone.
Right,
just comes across as an update. They don't have to wait for Apple.
So it seems to me like I don't think there's any way for them to automatically track you. If there was, that would be the obvious leg up to Google as opposed to Brightkite because you have to do that. You have to actually go to the Brightkite application and say, you know, figure out where I am and then post that.
I see what you're saying. So it would automatically follow me around, be constantly updating.
Okay, that's kind of creepy.
That would be creepy.
That just creeps me out.
That was the impression that I've been getting from everybody on the Twitter, is that it's an automatic thing.
Oh, I am so not using that.
Well, from what I saw, in that little video, there was a way for you to specify your privacy level. You can say street level or you know whatever, that kind of stuff, and then maybe make private places. So when you get home and you get close to home, it'll just say, oh, you're just in this town all of a sudden instead of actually at your house, which is your address and all that.
Yeah, but then when you tell your boss you're at home sick and it shows you're in Vail, you have a problem.
Well, you turn that's true. You turn it off, I guess. You have to remember to turn it off or you're screwed. Who knows? I don't know if the, I can't think of any way that they would automatically track you doing that unless they have some crazy deal going on. It doesn't make any sense to me that they can automatically track it. So if you guys on the internet and the Twitter, either send me an at reply or send us an email and let us know, because we're obviously not willing to read through and understand the blog post on Google's site. So if you've tried it, anyone with a phone that is not the iPhone and you've tried it, let us know. There you go.
I'll try and have an update ready next week, because I've received several requests from people, so I'll probably get on there just to try it out.
Can you do it on the iPhone though, right now?
It sounds like you could do it from the web or my notebook, right?
Okay, yeah.
I can do it from my Mac.
Yeah, yeah. So give that a try and we'll see how that works out.
You know, there's a couple things that make BrightKite very compelling. So I'm curious to see how those features match up with Latitude. And the big thing is I can post a photo to BrightKite, and then people can comment on BrightKite to that photo. So I can have that whole conversation going on. And since I can post a photo to BrightKite and then have it tweet automatically for me, that's how I actually post photos to Twitter.
Same here, yeah.
Right, and I do that specifically because people can comment on the photos.
You have the context of where you are for it.
Right.
Which adds so much, because, you know, you say, I'm having dinner, and you're checked in at, I don't know, Applebee's or whatever. And so then you know Jeff is having dinner at Applebee's, and he's eating this delicious meal of, you know, whatever Jeff eats for dinner. And you can
chocolate chip on cookies and Dewars. No, wait, that's lunch.
That's lunch. Yeah, so that's cool. I don't know. I'll probably stick with the BrightKite unless the Google thing is, you know, so compelling. But I like the way BrightKite is set up right now.
So Reed. Do I. So Google's going to have a big chore ahead of them to convince me that I should use Latitude instead of BrightKite. And if there's someone at Google that thinks they can convince me that Latitude is better, let me know, because I will keep an open mind, but I'll let you know right now, my satisfaction level with BrightKite is high enough, it will be difficult to sway me.
Yeah. The only thing that would really make BrightKite even better is an automatic update, although I may get irritated by that soon. You know,
I would shut it off immediately.
You would turn it off.
Oh yeah.
There are certain things that you want checked in. So if you go, you know, I'm stopping off to go for a bathroom break on the way up, you know, on a trip or something, you don't want to check in on that. Obviously, you wouldn't check in. But if you're going, you know, you're stopping off at your hotel or something, or you're stopping off at an amusement park, you want to check in on that, let everybody know. It's just it's the same kind of idea as Twitter. You're not necessarily, I mean, you can Twitter about the fact that you're eating, you know, a potato chip, but you probably won't, because you don't want to annoy everybody and nobody really cares about it. As opposed to maybe, you know, going to the amusement park or something like that. So I think it's the same idea. And I think that's actually what the BrightKite guys said on our podcast. They said, you know, the Twitter thing, it doesn't have as much location context as we would like, and so that's why we did the BrightKite. So I think that's exactly the same idea. So, yeah, let's move on. Do we want to talk about the carrier settings update thing? The only reason I want to mention it and bring it up is because I don't think this has happened before. Is this the first time we've gotten one of these?
The microcell is interesting to me.
Okay.
Just the technology and what it's trying to, the problem it's trying to solve, if I understand what it is exactly.
You want to explain that? What it is?
Well, I'll explain what I think it is.
Otherwise, I think Jeff can say what it is that was TUAW. We got, okay, go ahead.
No, I can explain.
Right. So I guess these microcells are supposed to make up for some of the coverage deficiencies of the 3G network, right? And these are like, is it an actual base station or something that you get from AT&T that goes inside your house? They said they're kind of like these little mini cell towers that customers would have, I guess.
Like a little box, probably like a little router size thing. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, it's like a little base station that you get and put in your house, and then it gives you a boosted signal, cell phone signal, and it uses your internet connection for part of that as well, so that it can stream the data back out. So it acts like a repeater in that it gives you a stronger signal where you are, but then it acts like a router in that it's using a different method to get that signal pushed out beyond where you are.
So is that so it works by you plug it into your home internet, you don't have to get some special connection to AT&T?
From what I understand, you don't. But keep in mind, my experience with all of this is, like 48 hours old now, 72 hours old, because this update thing happened Friday night, and then I've been doing a little bit of hunting over Saturday. Okay, just Saturday, because today apparently I was eating cookies at a bar. But so from what I've seen so far, it uses whatever your current internet connection is to get that broadband connection to get that signal back out to AT&T.
You know, I think they actually have this. They've been using this in other locations, as far as, you know, not personal locations. But I went to an Apple store on my way out to see Callie Lewis. She had a meetup in Chicago, and we were just killing time at an Apple store. And it was a spot in between Chicago and Rockford that just didn't have 3G coverage yet. But as soon as we walked into that Apple store, immediately we had 3G. And as soon as we walked out, we had no 3G. It went back to Edge. And from what I'm looking at, it's a little box that you plug into. It says you will need DSL fiber or cable broadband internet access to operate your AT&T 3G microcell device. So you plug that in there. You register it with AT&T. And magic happens, and then you have a little 3G hotspot in your house. So it's not a repeater. It's just kind of an extra thing. Now, does this work with just internet access, or will this work with voice as well?
I think this is for anything that gets a 3G signal.
I think
my
so
understanding
too, because they would have
kind
to
of their way to boost their coverage into areas where they have dead zones or weaker coverage.
Right.
What I would like to know is, do these things work like a little mesh network? So if I have a dozen of them in a neighborhood that's maybe a dead spot, am I able to jump between them, or, you know, is it locked down to just your device? Like, it's your own little private microcell, or is AT&T going to be able to leverage these, get these in tons of locations, be it retail, small businesses, homes, and sort of create this little 3G mesh network?
I think
that's a good question.
I heard, I don't know where I saw it, but I heard that it was going to be for both personal and for business uses. And obviously it works, you know, in that same example at the Apple store, it works for anybody. And yeah, it would make sense that you actually have to register your device once you acquire it. However you do that, that's not clear here. But you have to set it up with AT&T so that service does come in. And it wouldn't make sense, of course, if it was just for internet access, because then you just get a Wi-Fi router. Duh. So, yeah, it is for the 3G service and calling mostly, I would assume. So that, I think that's really a really, really cool idea, depending on how much it costs. And if it costs you anything to, you know, any service charges, it doesn't seem like there would be.
You know, if AT&T was smart, they would give people these when they ask for them.
Yeah.
Because if they're going to allow anyone to connect to the device, then, I mean, come on. They can give people boxes, and they can build out their 3G network so fast without even having to build up a lot of the infrastructure themselves.
Well, that impacts, doesn't that impact your home internet access, though, if someone else is using your...
Sure.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's something that would have to be personal and you'd have to enter in a code or not. But I still think it's a great idea, because, you know, you go back after, you know, 10 days or whatever of having your iPhone, and you say, I don't have reception at my house. They say, oh, well, and they just, you know, pull the box out from behind their backs and say, here, use this. And, you know, you go on your merry way and they still have your contract. So it's a win-win for everybody, I think. It's a great idea.
Okay, so I clicked through on the thing. It is this little mini box that goes in your house. It supports up to 10 3G phones in a home or small business, it says. It gives you the enhanced coverage that works over a range of 5,000 square feet. Does mention that it's available with unlimited minute plans for individuals or families. So I think this is you got to pay for this thing. So if that's the case, that'd be really annoying. So you're in a 3G dead spot and they go, oh, well, you can buy our microcell and pay whatever this is extra a month and have, you know, 3G coverage in your home or your, or for your small business. I would imagine a lot of businesses would, you know, especially if they have a sales force or a bunch of people on iPhones, that might be more attractive to them. They don't give any details on whether it, it is a charge, but it, the wording of this makes it sound like there would be a charge, but it does say there's seamless handoff. So as you go, you know, if you started your call connected to the microcell and then moved out of range, it would get picked up by AT&T's cellular service. And it does say that it is secure, so you can lock it down so only authorized users have access. So it does sound like it's a kind of a little private 3G hotspot for your for your phone.
I like it, as long as you don't have to pay extra for it. So that's what's included in the update. I don't think we've heard any other mentions.
Yeah, support for that, basically, right?
Support for that.
So if you had one of these, your iPhone would support it.
Yeah, so I think it included status icons, and that's how we figured out what it was. So it says it'll change from AT&T to AT&T M-Cell, and that's how you'll know, you know, as soon as you get one of those things, I suppose. So that's available in the update. It's a very small update. And when I did the update, nothing even happened on the face of my iPhone. It just kind of sat there for a second and then just said, oh, hello. And it was done. It was like, I don't know, not even a megabyte big to update that. So if you haven't plugged in your iPhone, hit, you know, plug in your iPhone, hit check for update, and you'll have that little bit of juicy updatedness.
Does it cause any
Assuming
problems
you're
for,
in the United
for
States.
Jailbreak?
I haven't heard. I don't think it updates the baseband or anything. I think if it had to update the baseband, the modem, and the cell modem, I think it would have to reboot and do an actual firmware flash.
Right.
So I think it's just software support in the phone, which is cool to see that Apple actually has the ability to just add on a patch, because from what we've seen with every single update so far, it's been a whole grueling process of, you know, doing essentially a full wipe and restore of either just the system partition or both user and system partition. So cool.
I'm going to give you a 10-minute warning, a 12-minute warning.
Well, we're moving on to the iPhone picks. So, Jeff, well, let's go with Adam because you've got a warning.
All right. Well, now, I meant to ask this before, and hopefully we have not done this pick before. If not, let me know because I have a backup pick. So have we done classics yet?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I'm going to pick classics, which is a book reader for the iPhone, and it is, you know, not every book. It's not like something like Stanza. We might have done Stanza before, which kind of has a very, very large collection.
Yeah, it has Dracula, Treasure Island, Pride and Prejudice, A Christmas Carol, you know, Time Machine, all that stuff.
They're constantly updating. So
yeah.
When I got it the first time, I think it had maybe half a dozen to maybe nine books.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think they're maybe up to about a dozen different books. But what is great is the UI on it is just gorgeous.
Yeah.
You got a little bookshelf that you flip through, and the books have, you know, their illustrations and plates when they have them. When you actually turn the pages, you get a nice page curl. It's very, very readable.
Yep.
It's just a really nicely designed book app, and they're mostly, I think, books that are in the public domain.
Yep.
But they are constantly adding more. Simple app, but I like it a lot.
Do these updates come as a full update to the application, or does the application itself grab books individually? And can
I think
you
every time I've seen it update, it's just an update to the application. So, you know, the next version will have two more books added to
but
it.
But the books don't really take up that much space, I assume.
I don't think so.
Okay.
So it's on sale. I only have an 8 gig iPhone.
Yeah, it's on sale right now. $299, 40% off for a limited time. Grab it now. It's called Classics. It's a fantastic application. Stuff done by Sebastian DeWith. He actually IM'd me and said, hey, check this out. So he did some, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous application. So that is, what did I say, $299? Classics.
Yep.
And if you don't grab it, I think it's, what, six bucks? Who knows?
I think, I want to say it was normally $4.99. I think I paid originally.
If I could do math, I could figure that out. Jeff, what do you have for us?
Cool Iris.
Cool Iris. I've heard about
okay.
this.
So the deal is I'm an information junkie. which means that I'm totally in the right line of work because I have to keep up on news all the time. The cool thing, Cool Iris lets you look at news and other things that are out there on the internet. But instead of just giving you like regular lists of headlines and stuff, it gives you like this panel that's full of images, and you can swipe across the panel. And then when you see a picture that you find interesting, you just tap on it. And then it gives you a description of what that is.
Yeah.
So like right now I just tapped on something and it said newfound comet Luland to grace night skies. Okay, great. So if I tap on the article headline at that point, excuse me, then I get the full article that's about this comet thing. Or if it's a video, I'll see that, you know, whatever it is. And
so it's got a lot of cool core animation stuff in it.
Yeah. And so you can just sit there and flip through and find something that looks interesting. And I found this to be a really cool way to just find news articles that I wouldn't otherwise come across, but I'm interested in some way.
Now, is this coming? Is this pulling stuff from like Google News, or is there?
I think it's pulling from everywhere. I think it's finding all kinds of stuff all over the interwebs.
Can you change the set of like RSS feeds, or have you not seen that?
I don't think you can. I think it just is what it is.
Okay, it's cool. It looks really cool. It's free too. So. It's called Cool Iris.
Yeah, and there's okay. So there is a search feature, so you can choose what service you want to search through. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of cool too.
And you can email people and download images and find wallpapers. Very cool. I got to check that out.
Yeah, it's a very fun application.
Awesome. Cool Iris. COOLIRIS. Now my pick is. Called Gas Cubby, and it is $4.99, and it is one of my favorite apps right now because I just got a car. I got a Volkswagen Jetta, and so there are, you know, obviously when you get a car, there are expenses involved in that, such as gas, biggest expense, of course, maybe most frequent expense, I would say. Service may be more expensive, but this lets you keep track of both service and gas, the two major things that, you know, make up what you spend on your car. And so whenever you go and you get a fill up, you hit, you know, I want to add a new entry into my little log of, you know, filling up my tank or whatever. And you tell it, you know, what the odometer reading is. So it can figure out gas mileage if you want to do that. Keep track of whenever you do it. It automatically fills in the date and the time. You can say it's a full or a partial fill up. You can say how much you put in there and cost per gallon and all that stuff. It figures stuff out for you really quickly. And you can add as much information to this as you want. But if you want to just say, hey, I just did a fill up at this date, that's fine. But you can even add, you know, how you paid for it, the gas brand, tags to it, location, tire pressure, notes, just tons and tons of stuff. As far as service goes, I think this is even cooler because, you know, if you get an oil change, you got to know, you know, in so many, you know, depending on your car, I think it's like, what, 3,000 miles, you want to get another oil change. So once you put in, you know, I got an oil change at, you know, whatever odometer reading, the application will actually, you can set up for each individual car. So you can even track multiple cars and you can set up when you want service reminders. So you can say every so many months or after, you know, so many miles, it will remind you the next time you open the application, say, it'll just say, hey, you know, you're due for an oil change or something like that. Or so the really, it's just, there are so many different reasons to get this application. You can track your expenses with your car. You can see when you fill up. You can even track, you know, what the gas prices are trending. So if you turn it, you know, to the side, you'll get a little graph of what gas prices are, you know, as you've driven your car and filled up and all that stuff. And like I said, you can figure out your mileage, and it's just so cool. It's the perfect thing, I think, for anyone with a car. You should just get this application because it you will never again wonder, you know, I guess you get a little sticker at the Lube Pros, but you know, you can just see at the bottom of the application how much money you've tossed into your car so far. And you can search through all this stuff, and it's just a great, great interface. It works well. You can set up these service reminders. You can have custom service reminders. So you can say, you know, after, you know, so many miles, I want to replace my wiper blades and remind me of that. Or, you know, after so many miles, I want to check on my, you know, taillights or something. so you can get out and make sure all those are working. And it'll remind you of that. It's just, it's very customizable, works great, tracks multiple cars. You can search through it. Gas Cubby is the name of the application. $4.99. It's great. Go out and get it. And so I think that's it. We have codes we're going to be giving away to Beehive IM, Forensic, and Drink Wine once we hit 4,000 subscribers or something like that. I think as soon as we increase by 1,000. So if you tell a friend to listen to the podcast, send me an at reply on Twitter, Michael Johnston, and say what kind of code you want. You know, Beehive, Forensic, Drink Wine. Or what was the other? EcoCal?
Oh, yeah. EcoCal.
Yep. So just specify which code you want. So then when we hit that number, I'll start giving out codes to people who have gotten their friends to subscribe to the podcast. And of course, we have this great partnership going on with the Burn Ball guys, a game called Burn Ball. It's 99 cents right now. It's kind of like a Sonic the Hedgehog meets D-Blob. It's a really fun game. So right now, if you can, you can participate in our tribe, and if you beat everyone else on the scoreboards at the end of the night, we will get another promo code to give away to get some more people into the tribe and beat the heck out of a bunch of other iPhone sites on the internet. So I think Resorian Fly, 148 Apps, iPod Touch Fans, and the Portable Gamer, they've all got their own tribes, so they're playing against us. So join the iPhone Alley tribe. We'll put the link in the show notes, and it's really simple. Just grab Burnball, type in your name, and followed by a space and IPA, and that's how we'll know if we get on the if we win one of the rounds. And we actually won one round yesterday, so it started a couple days ago. So we're having fun with that. And so, of course, iPhoneAlley.com is a place to get news, tips, and reviews. If you have a product you'd like us to review or an app you'd like us to review, let us know. Hit the contact link. If you have any tips, iPhone tips, hit the contact link and let us know. iPhone picks and show notes, of course, are at iPhoneLA.com/podcast. Feedback can be sent to podcast@iPhoneLA.com. Once again, Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer, MacObserver.com, Twitter.com/JGamet. Thank you so much for being here, Jeff.
Oh, sure thing, and thanks for having me on again.
You're welcome.
Or as always, or as usual.
We love having you on, as always. Adam Christensen as well from the MacCast, MacCast.com and Twitter.com/MacCast. He's running off to tend to his family in 2 minutes. So that's why I'm talking fast. And of course, my Twitter is Twitter.com/Michael Johnston. And with that, another episode of the iPhone Alley podcast is out the door.
An iPod.
What's that? And an internet. Someone tightening something?
Adam's going to shoot us.
What is that?
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right?
Is that,
I have no idea.
Someone... is that a defective duck call or something? I don't know. Can Adam, do you hear it?
Wait, what?
It sounds like a ratchet noise or something.
No, it's me. I'm messing around with one of these cable ties I got at Home Depot.
No. You would.
Who wants a stylus? We have to get them.